Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're opening today visiting with one of the co-founders of the Annie C. Courtney Foundation, a nonprofit assisting families and individuals touched by all aspects of the child welfare system. Did you know nearly half of our youths exiting foster care experience homelessness by the time they're age 26, and many more are unstably housed? Stick around and learn how you can help Annie C. do something about it. Then we'll pivot to chat with the leader of the McCall Behavioral Health Network, which has just initiated a brand new program to fast-track individuals reaching out for mental health and crisis assistance to the expert care they need, most often the day of or day after that call for assistance. And we're going to close learning about a number of issues the Connecticut Psychological Association wants you to know about that will occupy part of the speedy agenda during the 2024 State General Assembly short session. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Since temporarily pausing programming last year, supporters of the Green Village Initiative have been busy behind the scenes working to secure funding and partnerships that will allow GVI to offer resources to the community along with planning, programming, and other activities for the year ahead. To date, all of your messages, donations, and important questions have resonated with them, and those involved want to extend a huge thank you. If you'd like to learn more about what GVI has in store for 2024, their new transition team and their work providing resources on food justice, urban farming, youth programming, and more, sign up for their e-newsletter or visit them online at gogvi.org. All right. Well, the voice of my friend Deb Kelleher is back on the line with us this morning, and they've got a really important event coming up in just a short amount of time. Deb is affiliated with the Annie C. Courtney Foundation. This is a 501c3 nonprofit founded by Deb and Sue Plowman back in 2011 as a result of their work together on a community collaborative up in northwestern Connecticut. They realized that they shared a passion for assisting families and individuals touched by all aspects of the child welfare system, and Annie C's mission was born. So beyond the boilerplate, Deb, thanks for joining us again today. And give us a little bit of this backstory, because I love the kind of family ownership of this initiative that sprang from the philanthropic goodwill of your grandmother.
So first of all, John, thanks for having me. And second, thanks for recognizing my grandmother. She happens to be one of my most favorite people ever. So my grandmother, who is Annie C, was a kinship caregiver. She unfortunately had both of her parents die when she was quite young, and she ended up raising all of her brothers and sisters to adulthood, and then began to plan her life. After that, she ended up getting married much older than most people did back in the 1920s and 30s. And although that didn't stop her from having four beautiful daughters, the oldest of which was my mom. And then I happen to be the oldest. And then I'm also the oldest of all my cousins. And then my son is the oldest. So we are continuing the tradition in our family. My grandmother was a force to be reckoned with. Given her commitment to family, my friend Sue and I decided to name the agency after my grandmother. Kinship care is very near and dear to my heart because of that, and because I also believe very strongly that children should remain with their families, if at all possible, when they do need to leave their parents. And so that is a big part of our mission, is supporting our families who rise to the challenge and support their family members when they need help.
Excellent. Well, aside from what we're going to talk about for most of the rest of our visit this morning, which is the opportunity to participate and support the first home purchase to house young adults who were formerly in foster care and have kind of aged out of that system, what are a couple of the other projects or initiatives that you guys do at the Annie C. Foundation that might catch the ear of one of our listeners who may want to get involved either as a volunteer or as a financial supporter?
So first and foremost, we are always looking for families who are interested in becoming foster parents to help care for the children who don't have family members who can care for them. So anyone interested in becoming a foster family can call our office at 475-235-2184, and we'll help you figure out the system and help you navigate through. But one of our other big efforts recently is we have been awarded a $150,000 grant by through the auspices of Senator Blumenthal's and Senator Murphy's office to start a used bookstore, which will be called Annie's Books. And the point of that initiative is to be able to train young adults who are aging out or who have already aged out of foster care in how to operate their own retail business. So once we receive the grant, which it's still making its way through the federal system, we will be opening the bookstore and having the kids come in and learn all aspects of working the bookstore, from, you know, taking in the used books and donations to, you know, placing them in inventory and learning how to, you know, be on the sales floor and doing the bookkeeping, et cetera. That's something that I am very excited about. My grandmother loved to read, and so do I. And I cannot wait until we can combine like two of my favorite things to do, which is work with our young adults and work with books in this one initiative. We're hoping to locate it in Waterbury. We met with the mayor's office last week to talk about that. And we're hoping to move forward before the end of this calendar year.
Oh, that's very exciting. You are just the latest, Deb, in a long lineage of guests here on the award-winning For the People who have spoke to some degree or a great degree on the plight of young people, whether they be alternately abled or in other situations like foster care, who reach a point where they sort of age out of a huge umbrella of support services. And it's so disturbing to see the statistics that you've released to your constituents about the latest National Alliance to End Homelessness information, which has found horrifically that between 31 and 46% of youth, up to almost half of youth exiting foster care experience homelessness by the time they hit age 26, and many more of them are unstably housed, which brings us to the initiative that I think we actually launched when we first met back on the air in 2022, when you got that HUD grant for the down payment on a purchase of a multifamily home in Greater Waterbury. Today, that initiative is still continuing and sort of reaching a critical point. Let's turn it over to you to kind of walk us through exactly where you're at with that project and how our listeners and others might be able to help.
So thank you. That is actually our biggest project to date, and it's called New Beginnings. And this is going to be a series of multifamily homes that we will be purchasing where young adults who've aged out of care will be able to rent an apartment from us and receive support services so that they can be stably housed and so that they can be successfully launched into adulthood. So in addition to the federal grant we've received, we've raised over $50,000, and that's why we're holding our fundraising dinner on February 29th, Leap Day, and in the hope that we'll be able to leap forward with enough funding to be able to actually purchase the home outright instead of working with a mortgage. As everybody knows, in this state and in the country, actually, mortgage rates have increased substantially since you and I first talked in 2022, and our buying power has decreased every month. And so we look at that information, and we've worked really, really hard now to try and raise additional funds to supplement what we thought was going to be sufficient, because it's no longer sufficient to make an outright purchase. We're very, very excited about this because we feel like if we're able to purchase a home in an area where there might be other homes eventually available, we'll be able to eventually form kind of a mini neighborhood where the youth will not only have our support, but we'll be able to have the support of each other, making kind of a little chosen family for them, especially for the kids who don't have contact with their first families.
So this event is coming up on February 29th from 6 to 9 at the Crystal Room in Naugatuck. Very easy to get to right off of Route 8, a couple minutes off Route 8 and just 5 minutes or so south of Route 84. So no matter where you're listening, they would welcome your attendance, not just to help celebrate and support this effort of obtaining and finalizing this New Beginnings project and the dream of having a home that will begin the formation of a community in Greater Waterbury for a number of these young people who could in any other situation potentially be facing homelessness or be unstably housed. A part of supporting individuals like this who've had in most cases a tough go and a lot of challenges. It's a great way to kind of turn your philanthropy into a positive, not just for the immediate beneficiaries, but for the communities and the neighborhoods where they hopefully will be living, thanks to the great work of Annie C. And their volunteers. So, Deb, in closing, we've got just about 2 minutes. Could you relate a specific heartwarming or success story based on your interaction with one or more of these young people?
Good question. I'm going to talk a little bit about our master of ceremonies that evening. His name is Charnel Bush, and he was in foster care as a young adult, actually from the time he was about 9 years old. And he was fortunate enough to have a family member come forward to become his legal guardian when he was a teenager. And that is what has kept him stable. Those are the stories that we like to share with families to explain that these are the ways that we either keep kids stable. And for the kids who don't have that, that's when we need to step up and provide additional support. If anyone wants to hear a really great story, there's a young man named Chris Scott here in the state who was homeless during part of his time in college. And he is now running a nonprofit called Sun Scholars, whose main mission is to provide college support to young adults who've been in foster care. Less than 3% of young adults in foster care have graduated from college. So it's a wonderful, wonderful story of success.
The Annie C. Courtney Foundation out of the Greater Waterbury area is a 501c3 nonprofit that is working at assisting families and individuals touched by all aspects of the child welfare system. If you'd like to come out and support their upcoming event here at the end of the month or get to know them and perhaps provide some volunteer or financial support, you can learn all about them at Annie C. That's ANNIEC.org. Deb Kelleher, one of their co-founders, with us this morning to talk about it. Deb, good luck with the event. Thank you so much, and we look forward to talking to you again. Well, we have a growingly familiar voice on the line with us this morning, and I so appreciate touching base with Maria Kooten Skinner with the McCall Behavioral Health Network. This nonprofit has been serving Connecticut for over half a century, specializing in helping and healing individuals with substance use disorders, mental health issues, or both. McCall provides a full range of behavioral health services. They have prevention and treatment all the way to recovery, support, and community engagement. And they help to overcome adversity on the part of individuals in their care and their families. And they help build resilience and achieve wellness, serving Danbury, Waterbury, Winston, and Torrington up in the northern reaches of some of our listening areas. Thank you guys for listening up there in Litchfield County. Maria is has been on our program before. She is a president and CEO of McCall Behavioral Health Network. And before we dig into the big news at hand, Maria, I think the last time we talked, the plans for a brand new building were just beginning to transition from the drawing board to the first phase of pre-construction. How's that going?
Oh, good morning, John, and it's such a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much for having me. The progress is coming along. I think with a building that's, you know, 100 years old, you're always going to find some surprises as you start to do some renovations. And, you know, we're rolling with all of that and making sure that all of the funding is there, the architectural drawings, the big dreams. So all of it is unfolding, and we're excited about every bit of it, really keeping our eye on when we'll be able to cut the ribbon and welcome families inside for services. So thank you for remembering and asking.
Oh, sure. How's your caseload been, and how are things looking from across the landscape of your service constituents up there in Waterbury and Points North?
Yeah, so I think the caseloads are steadily growing, which I look at as a good thing. We know, I mean, that there's tons of documentation about folks having struggles with their mental health. As a matter of fact, I was pleased to see that the state of Connecticut is rolling out a comprehensive plan to address loneliness. This is what we hear from people who come and talk with our therapists, but just that folks were already kind of teetering on the edge of loneliness and disconnection. And then I think if there was any bit of that in your life, COVID and post-COVID has certainly pushed folks over the edge of that. And I think what we're looking at is an era where more and more people can recognize, understand, and accept that if you are feeling lonely, if you're feeling like you are drinking too much, or that you're experiencing anxiety, or that it's hard to go to school or work because it's hard to get out of bed, that there is help available, and that it's the stigma is not as much of a barrier as it once was. So I think, again, the caseloads, yes, are big, but we're able to address and help heal folks who we know are struggling.
Hmm. I'm glad you brought up the stigma, because that is something we have been fighting here on the award-winning For the People for decades, and trying to minimize and eliminate that stigma. And over that time, and even in probably our prior conversations, we've talked about how, you know, stigma sort of from the top down. It's something that's handed down to the younger generation from the older generation. So I'm just wondering your perspective on how the youngest members of your client base are doing in terms of being willing to approach and enabled to embrace the kind of help that McCall offers. Do you find that you know, the younger they are, the less stigmatized they are, and the more willing they are to kind of just you know, jump into the seat, grab the oar, and start rowing?
Well, I think there's real differences when you look across the generations. As a matter of fact, I was talking with my daughter and her fiance over dinner last night about this very topic, and I think the stigma still exists, but access might look different for a young person. So I think conversations about mental health is normalized. Having a therapist is normalized. But I think there is a, that there might be ideas about how to access. So that might be a click or AI, or that you're going to, maybe just download an app and say, well, this is all I need and this will be helpful. That, if I have to, go to therapy every week or take a medication or do something else, that there still is this idea that, that might indicate a lack of willpower, a lack of strength. Mm-hmm. And so we still have a lot of work to do to overcome and recognize that, if you have, so I'll give a very personal example. Mm. I have asthma. That is a chronic illness. Mm-hmm. I have to exercise every day. I had an appointment with my pulmonologist this morning. That's an important part of making sure that I have regular care. Me being able to share that with you this morning, John, on a radio program, I don't have to worry that anybody is going to judge me for that.
Sure.
Because I'm not blamed for my circumstances, and I'm not considered weak because I have to take an inhaler. So why do we apply different standards and different ideas in our culture to when someone is taking care of their mind and their heart?
Mm. I also know that in prior conversations, we talked about how you were both celebrating your spectacular staff, but also looking to add more. And we do hear the tales of diminishing, diminishing returns in terms of all kinds of healthcare staffing. How's that going on that front for McCall?
So I was very honored to be part of Comptroller Sean Scanlon's healthcare cabinet, where I co-chaired the mental health committee. So we were looking at all aspects of health, and the through line across every single aspect of healthcare, and certainly that includes mental health care, there were three, real headline issues: workforce, access, and reimbursement rates, the cost of delivering healthcare. And workforce certainly remains a massive challenge. And one of the things that we talked about and made recommendations around was how to adequately care for the caregivers. And that we have this idea that, that the healthcare workforce is a group of healthy, well people taking care of a group of sick people. When in fact, we're so much more multifaceted and complex than that. And the workforce is comprised of human beings with the full range of human experiences. And so is the patient population. And so what are we building in terms of pathways to care for the current workforce and then to attract people into healthcare? And we're doing that work across Connecticut, talking with high school students, college students, offering internship and exposure programs so that they can realize what a wonderful and fulfilling job healthcare is. So I think we've got some great innovative ideas and proposals, and I think there does need to be some courageous next steps in terms of how to make sure that those things are in place so that we can adequately care for the caregivers.
Okay. Well, before we take a little break and then get into the big new news about this great new open access program you've launched, the final thing I wanted to talk about and maybe help you reassure listeners who may want to come to McCall for support is how are you doing in terms of reimbursement for those who are coming to the table with insurance, and the assumption that because they have insurance and now they're compelled, the insurance companies are compelled to cover mental health treatments. How's that dynamic going for you guys?
Well, one of the things that we want to make sure everybody knows is that we don't turn anybody away because of an inability to pay. So So we accept state grant dollars that allows us to say that, but that only goes so far. So you have people who have, you know, high deductible plans, and when they're in that space, when they're having to, you know, pay out of pocket for critical care, because mental health care is critical care. Yes. People stay away because they simply can't afford it. So we say to people, please come in. We will work with you. We will figure it out together. But that means that McCall does an enormous amount of fundraising. So tonight, as a matter of fact, we have a fundraiser put on by a board member who is donating her time, Gabby Bernstein. And that is to make sure that those dollars are there so that when someone walks through our door, we don't have to turn them away. But so the burden is on the nonprofits to make sure that we go and look for grants and philanthropists and the kindness of others so that the most vulnerable among us don't get turned away. I think we really need to knock on the doors of insurance companies and say, if we can do this, you need to meet us halfway and be able to reimburse at rates that actually cover the cost of doing business.
Very good. That's a conversation for a complete segment on another day. We've got a lot more exciting news to talk about, and I'm talking about open access up at the Torrington McCall facility. We're going to talk all about that when we come back from this quick break. Maria, hang with us, and we'll be right back with Maria Kooten Skinner, President and CEO of McCall Behavioral Health Network. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Did you know that over the last 5 years of reporting, more than 33,000 crashes across Connecticut listed backing up as the vehicle maneuver, according to the UConn Crash Data Repository? So with that in mind, AAA recommends the following tips for drivers to keep themselves and other road users safe when leaving a parking spot. Stay engaged. Drivers should not rely solely on reverse automatic emergency braking to prevent collisions, but use backup cameras and their own two eyes to enhance their awareness of their surroundings. Check behind and around your vehicle before you get in the car. Then back up slowly and cautiously when their side vision is obstructed, and allow the technology to see past the obstructions to detect cross traffic, giving the system more time to apply the brakes and prevent a collision. And if you can, at all times, just pull through. Pull through a space in a parking lot so you can exit the spot moving forward. This safety message has been brought to you by the award-winning For the People and our friends at AAA and the UConn Crash Data Repository. Well, we're back. Thanks for being with us. Maria Kooten Skinner is the president and CEO of the McCall Behavioral Health Network, a nonprofit serving Connecticut for over 50 years, specifically along and north of the 84 corridor between Greater Waterbury and Greater Danbury, and then all the way up to near the Massachusetts border up in Winsted and Torrington. They have just launched a new program called Open Access in Torrington. So, Maria, let's turn our the attention and the rest of our program here to talking about that.
Wonderful. Thank you. So Open Access is basically people can walk in without an appointment and be able to be seen most times on the same day by a clinician, by a therapist, to be able to start their journey to feeling better with their mental health, with any kind of issues with substances. And it's really remarkable.
So how does it work? What would an individual experience if they decided and mustered up the willingness to come through the door?
So they start with a phone call, 860-496-2100, and we'll do a short triage with them over the phone. Basically, that's just a series of questions that assesses how acute and immediate their needs are. And every once in a while, someone will call and we'll have to say that you would be best served in either by mobile crisis or in an emergency room. But most times, we can see them and they'll come in. We have certain hours that are blocked off as open access hours, which are on our website, and I can tell you about them too. But after that triage, they're told, okay, come in today between these hours and we'll be able to see you. What we've recognized and what the data shows is that there's a lot of ambivalence. Human beings, we're complicated creatures. Mm. And so anytime we're going to take such a courageous step as saying, I know I need help, that's going to be accompanied by ambivalence. And we recognize that. So if someone can say, I need help, if they can be seen on that same day, there's a 90% chance that they're going to keep that appointment. If they have to wait 24 hours, that goes down to 70%. And then each subsequent day that they would have to wait to be seen, that percentage that they'll actually keep that appointment goes progressively down. Hmm. So we're looking at all of the barriers that stand in the way of somebody taking that courageous step and saying, I need help, and eliminating as many barriers as we have control over. So that one, that somebody says they're ready and we can see them today, is what open access is all about.
Yeah, I imagine it must be like, you know, waiting for a biopsy, and the person calls, they're at that moment of crisis or self-realization that they're going to come to McCall Behavioral Health and get help, or they're going to reach out to some agency, and suddenly mm-hmm. they're told, okay, we'll call you back and set up an appointment in like 3 or 4 days. That's like that 3 or 4 days waiting to find out what the biopsy results are, like the anxiety and the intensity and the propensity, I guess, for something bad to happen begins to like multiply exponentially.
It could. Yeah. And I think the other thing is that as human beings, we think, well, okay, I've got this on my to-do list. I know that I could benefit from seeing a therapist. And then, you know, maybe you say, but the conditions have to be right. I've got all these competing needs for, you know, for my time. I'm busy. I've got, you know, all these things happening. It could be, you know, your car. It could be your kids. It could be your job, all these things. And you say, well, I'm going to put that off. And then, or you say, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to talk about really hard things. So I'm going to come up with a lot of other reasons why I don't have to go. Maybe I'm feeling a little bit better today. And I say, you know what, I can handle this myself. Let me talk to my friend or whatever. And so when we can meet people and say, that is normal, that is part of the human experience, we know that you are in that place, but we also know that therapy can help you. Come right now, then people will come.
Well, we want to make sure folks know, if they're interested in approaching McCall Behavioral Health Network, the scheduled hours and time slots for the open access visits are generally on Monday noon hour till 2:30 in the afternoon. Tuesday, same thing, 12:30 till 5:30. Wednesdays, yeah, in first thing in the morning, 8:30 till 2:30, nice wide open slot there. And then on Fridays in the morning from 8:30 to 10:30. What do people need to bring with them, and what will they be expecting when they arrive?
So they're going to make that phone call first, and the intake specialist will walk them through all of that. They can bring an ID and an insurance card if they have that. And we will take care of them. We will walk them through every step of that journey. I think we just applaud people for the courage and strength that it takes to say, I'm ready. And from there, we will meet you and we'll walk you through the rest of it.
I am hearing something for the first time, and perhaps listeners are, and those who are looking for help, biopsychosocial. This is an approach that McCall has taken for intake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's looking at every aspect of a person. So when we're asking someone to share their life story, we're looking at all of the component parts of your experience. And so we're certainly going to ask about the medical and the biological. We're going to ask about the psychological. We're going to also talk about social factors. Do you have a safe home to live in? Do you have access to healthy food? Do you have a network of people around you? So I think it goes beyond what we typically, would used to think about for what's going to be covered in an initial assessment. It just really means that you're looking at the whole person.
Excellent. And I wanted to also ask about the remind people about the hours. I'm sorry, the phone number that they need to call.
Yeah, so it's 860-496-2100. And you can also visit our website, mccallbhn.org. And you can even initiate a chat right there on the website with one of our intake specialists. And all the information is there, the phone numbers, the hours, all the stuff that we are talking about right now. You can look at, all of these services that are there to be offered, because we also recognize that initially it could be hard to come in. So again, kind of speaking to all of the barriers that are between a person knowing that they need help and being able to access it. We also have lots of outreach programs. We have two vans. So the hours for all of those things are also there on our website.
Very good. Maria Kudant-Skinner is the president and CEO of the McCall Behavioral Health Network. They specialize in helping individuals heal from substance use disorders, mental health issues, or both, focusing on a person's emotional and behavioral health and building stronger, more resilient communities throughout their service areas in Connecticut. We very much appreciate you coming on this morning, Maria, and talking about this brand new process to streamline and hasten intake for individuals who have made the decision to get better control of their life or their addiction or their mental health concerns by coming to McCall Behavioral Health. Once again, for more information on this intake program, no matter where you are, you can call 860-496-2100 or visit their website, McCallBHN, that's McCallBHN.org. Maria, thank you again so much for being part of the program, and good luck with this brand new initiative. I can't wait to talk more about it the next time we visit. Well, my guest this morning is from an organization that you should be very familiar with if you're a regular listener to the award-winning For the People. She is part of the Connecticut Psychological Association, CPA. She has been part of that organization for a while. Marcy Russo and I first met as we were both responding to the Sandy Hook tragedy, and I'm so glad to be able to connect with her again. She is going to be talking about how the Connecticut Psychological Association is going to be approaching this short session of the Connecticut legislature. They advocate, CPA advocates for professional psychology, advances psychology as a science, and promotes human welfare. And there's, I'm sure, a lot to talk about in this relatively brief time that we have with you, Marcy. Great to hear your voice. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, John. Good morning. It's great to be with you as well, too, and it is nice to hear your voice again. Mm.
So it's been a couple decades that you've been part of this association.
Yes, it has been, actually. I joined Connecticut Psychological Association, which actually it's an advocacy organization. It represents, there are over 2,000 licensed psychologists in Connecticut. And, we believe that it's important for us to have a dedicated organization that takes a look at the issues that affect the practice and science of psychology in Connecticut. And so Connecticut Psychological Association is a great place to do that, and is a great organization that does that. Specifically, I've actually been their legislative committee chair for the last 6 or 7 years, and I've really enjoyed that work in working with our state legislators to also understand, to help them understand how policy and law in Connecticut can impact psychology as well.
Right. When you think of something we'll talk about or have talked about before already on today's program, when you think of the stigma that is still associated with people seeking help for a completely normal and legitimate issue, how the stigma or the lack of true understanding doesn't necessarily just extend to the potential client or patient. It also extends to the individuals who are most suited and in a place of power to be able to make a positive difference. Those are our lawmakers in the State House here in Hartford and in Washington, D.C. Over your years of advocacy on behalf of CPA as their legislative liaison, what would you say has been the biggest success that you've been able to enjoy as a result of your work and the power that these many thousands of psychologists across the state of Connecticut have been able to exert?
I think what's been really refreshing for myself and my colleagues has been really the recognition of some specific legislators of really having an interest in understanding psychology and mental health really as a science, right? I think that they've really become to understand that, you know, mind and body is very well connected. And the extent to which we as a society are concerned and open about taking care of individuals' physical or medical well-being really is the same extent that we should be embodying and concerned about taking care of individuals' psychological or mind experiences, and seeing that the two are very integrated. And to think about individuals as a whole, we can't ignore one and only attend to the other.
Well, I want folks who are listening to know that as we record this interview, we're about 48 hours into the short session of the Connecticut legislature, even though we're playing this program about 10 days later. So I'm not sure much is going to have changed from today until a week from Sunday when this actually airs on the 18th of February. But I know that my last conversation with your organization almost exclusively focused on the Connecticut Information Exchange, CONI, and protecting patients' behavioral health data within the exchange system. So let's kick it off on that subject, since it is something we'd already talked about and we're very, very concerned about. Where do you stand right now in the legislative situation regarding the work that CPA is doing on CONI?
Yeah, so right, CONI is the Connecticut Information Exchange System, as you explained, and it really is a wonderful concept, and our membership at large really is excited about it, and that it really offers an opportunity for integrated care. So it really offers that opportunity of mind-body experience that I was talking a little bit about. You know, how can we as psychological partners be more readily available and involved in the treatment of individuals and work cooperatively with a patient's primary care physician, a child's pediatric, doctor. And at the same time, we understand and have to advocate for the protection and privacy of behavioral health information. And it is unfortunate, but we are still in a time where, release of behavioral health information into the wrong hands can significantly impact people's lives, can impact people's livelihoods, can impact people's social status at times. So we really are looking to find a nice balance between how can we as behavioral health providers participate in the CONI system, and at the same time, protect the confidentiality and make sure that those extra protections of behavioral health information really remain intact.
You know, I guess you'd hate to think that somebody would be afraid or would neglect to seek help from you or one of your members or a psychologist anywhere or a mental health counselor because they're exclusively afraid that the information that they're going to relate or some part of their personal information is somehow going to be revealed.
Yeah, absolutely, John. You know, unfortunately, that's happened for many, many years, and we still do see pockets of that phenomena happening, whether that's, you know, religious or cultural or ethnic influences about beliefs about seeking behavioral health care. But yes, I mean, patients are very, very concerned about wanting to receive care in the context of a secure and private environment and be able to feel comfortable and safe in discussing the issues that they need to with their behavioral health provider and know that that information is going to be kept sacred and safe and is really only going to be shared with their medical provider, with their consent, obviously, but also as what's going to be important in terms of what's in their best interest or what's going to help move along their care in a positive direction.
Yeah. One of the other things that we talked about with another guest on today's program who kind of laid it out their best by saying, insurance companies, come on, it's time to meet providers in the middle and cover the care we are giving to your insureds at the rate that it costs to deliver that care. So this is something that is also high on the priority list for CPA in the short session up in Hartford, the clawbacks that are happening by insurance companies.
Yeah, it is high on our list to really partner with the necessary state organizations or we're also partnering with other behavioral health groups. So, you know, it is not unusual. It's just not a psychologist issue. But we see our colleagues as social workers, as marriage and family therapists, as licensed drug and alcohol clinicians really seeing the same issue. And actually, there's really two issues that seem to have some ongoing, you know, challenges. And the first of what you talked about is a little bit of parity. I mean, we are now, honestly, in a time where there should not be the difference in payment and access that people are experiencing in terms of needing or able to access their behavioral health care in at any different rate or at any reduced rate other than how they would access medical care. And what I mean by that is, I'm sure you're aware, in behavioral health areas, we are treating life-threatening conditions. Mm-hmm. We are treating medical conditions. And it really should be that myself and my colleagues should be reimbursed at the same rate with the same importance and with the same frequency as our medical colleagues that are delivering medical care because behavioral health is medical care. And then the other thing we're seeing certainly is this thing called clawbacks. So for many of your listeners that might not know what a clawback is, a clawback is really an instance in which an insurance company who has already paid a provider for a service that provider delivered, and clawbacks happening not only in the behavioral health realm, but they happen in the medicine realm as well too. Mm-hmm. So dentists and chiropractors and physicians experience the same clawbacks. But they've paid a provider to deliver a service to a patient, and then months later, and in some instances years later, the insurance companies will say, oh, we mistakenly coded something wrong, or we mistakenly paid you the wrong rate, and so we're going to take money back from the money that we paid you for the service delivered. And although there are opportunities for providers to appeal those decisions, there's phone numbers we can call, the arduous and often dead-end experiences that we have with trying to appeal those processes is providers are given up, and we actually do not see a very viable way to appeal things. And so we're paying back money that was paid to us to originally deliver a service. So there's really a lot of
which may have been meager to start with, right?
Very meager to start with, quite frankly. Yeah. And, you know, some of the rates for the insurance companies with behavioral health providers has not changed for years. Mm. So it does not account for any kind of cost of living. And often behavioral health services are doled out in a way in which the insurance company determines your condition really only is going to require 6 sessions a year for you to get better, and that's all that we're going to pay for. You know, which, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't know that there's behavioral health experts that are often making these decisions in insurance companies in terms of, you know, what would make a condition better or not. Usually it's the expert that's providing the care that has some determination around medical necessity.
Yeah. Well, we talked earlier about the exceptional number of members that the Connecticut Psychological Association is able to boast. But we certainly know that the need still far outweighs the number of providers that may be readily available to deliver it when it's asked for. And part of the way that your organization is hoping to mitigate that is by getting psychology postdoctoral fellows onto the front lines and onto the into the business of client and patient care as quickly as possible. You're working with the Connecticut Department of Public Health in that department, right?
Yes, we are actually. So last legislative session, we were able to establish a temporary license for psychologists that would have completed their academic studies and are now practicing in the field and being supervised by a fully licensed psychologist in the field, but being, you know, practicing and being supervised towards full licensure. And our colleagues in social work and marriage and family therapy already have associate level temporary licenses established. So now bringing this to psychology, we have the hopes that that will help provide the establishment of more providers, certainly in the field. Access is really an issue. There really just aren't enough of providers to be available to the need that we're seeing in the state, particularly after the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, as we continue to recover from that pandemic and the psychological and, you know, socioeconomic toll that it had on our communities, we're still seeing people seeking behavioral health treatment at astonishing rates.
Well, to the credit of our legislature and your organization and many others like yours, it seems like post-COVID, finally, we've seen the rock hard resistance break, and there has been a really interesting and pleasant number of initiatives that have developed to address youth mental health care. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, Marcy, just let us know how you're going to be revisiting the issue of school-based care with legislators this year, given the fact that they seem to already at least be somewhat on the ball and on the right track toward addressing the mental health concerns of some of our youngest residents here in Connecticut.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think our legislature has done a wonderful job in drafting in some of the bills last year during legislative session of really increasing the availability of behavioral health clinicians in schools. You know, of course, that's where our children are. It's a very safe and available way in which students can attend to their academic needs and also do that integration of their behavioral health needs as well, too. So I do have to commend Connecticut for really putting additional time and, of course, dollars into the opportunity to not only expand some of our school-based you know, behavioral health services, but also initiatives so that we can have integrated care and we can have behavioral health providers have the opportunity to be supported and integrated into pediatricians' offices, you know, into urgent care clinics, which, again, offers a really nice opportunity for children and families to get holistic care.
Very good. Thank you so much, Marcy. Marcy Russo is a psychologist and one of the thousands practicing here in Connecticut, one of the many longtime members and a leader and a legislative liaison to the Connecticut Psychological Association, the voice of psychology and psychologists in Connecticut, advocating for professional psychology advancing psychology as a science and promoting human welfare. Marcy, thank you so much for this update. Best of luck in the short session, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon. We appreciate your time today. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.